And now it's time for wait a minute. What the hell is the show called again?
It's Chatter on Books. What else do you want me to say? Can I go now?
That's right. It's Chatter on Books. Let's do this thing.
How about let's do this thing for the 21st time, episode 21 of Chatter on Books.
We can vote. We can drink.
We can do this show in every state now. It's awesome.
That is very true.
Remember that?
I do.
Let's drive to West Virginia. It's 18 there.
No, the best was the grandfather clause.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. My brother, he turned 18 last year. He's legal. So he can get us whatever we need.
Exactly.
I grew up with 18 in D.C.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah,
same
yeah.
here.
I missed it by a year.
But just for beer and wine,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct, correct.
We would go to New York to get hard liquor at 18.
I still believe they should go back to 18.
Like smuggling rum? Were you a rum runner, Jeannie?
Yes, I was a rush. I was a rum runner.
What, a little extra cash on the side?
I just love you. Like, yeah, we used to go up to New York. I knew this guy, Capone. He would come in from Chicago. We had a whole operation.
Rum and cigarettes. Up and down 95.
Nicky, no one knows.
You and Joe Kennedy. That's how you guys operate. I knew that. We have a very exciting show for us tonight. We have a great author. Julie Langsdorf is going to be sitting
right.
with us. Yes?
If you want sex, envy, revenge.
Who doesn't want those
trees?
It's We've right, got that Julie is right down my, except for trees.
Good old gossip.
McMansions, white elephants. Yes. Yeah.
Talk about
and some Sears homes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Talk about relating to every character in the book. Like, yeah, I know that one. I know that one.
And every neighborhood I know.
It's like going to your local Strohsnyder's reading this book.
Yeah.
And by the way, can I just say this? This is going to seem a little bit like we're patting ourselves on the back here, but I love the reaction of every author that we get that comes in here and they're like, so this really is at a bar. And we're like, here, you want some food? Yeah, have some wine. Have some. We get pizza today. David, yeah. one of our
David
great
brought great pizza from Mama Lucia's.
Thank you, David. Yeah. That was
some
pizza. So sweet.
It's just, awesome. This is not your typical book club show.
No.
This ain't your mother's
we like
book club.
To get you hammered and have fun.
Exactly. The more hammered, the better.
The authors and their people.
Speaking of which, my glass is empty.
They often have people never believe me when I say, no, we do it in the bar. It's right there. So we have wonderful things on tap. We have Julie in just a little bit. We got a few other things. We've got a book report from me with David's assignment to me. Manage your expectations, people.
What?
This is going to be a long, deliberate process. Robert Mueller has nothing on me. We're going to talk about books as fashion accessories.
Mm-hmm.
What are you wearing? And to close the show, instead of the deserted island, we're going to go archipelago. Did I say that correctly?
I think you did.
Your
I'm glad you did because I can't say it.
Favorite series?
A lot of syllables.
Yeah. Archipelago.
And couldn't do plural of archipelago if it even exists. But a little housekeeping.
By the way, explain that. What is archipelago?
It's a chain of islands.
Yes, but what does that mean?
So it means the series of books instead of what's your favorite series, instead of what's your favorite book that you
what's
would
your
take
to
a deserted
series?
Island.
Yes.
We're keeping with the island theme, but we're expanding.
Yes.
If you can't fix a problem, expand it.
Exactly.
That is a really good life lesson, kids.
Exactly.
Yeah. But a little housekeeping. Social media. Download us, follow us, etc. Did a little fun research this weekend on our listeners. And, of course, they are in the United States. No surprise, they're in Canada and Mexico.
Really?
They are also in Australia, New Zealand, China,
India,
Spain, Germany, Russia, and one plucky person in Ukraine.
I know that person.
The most well-read person in the Ukraine.
Yeah, Dimitri.
Dimitri is with us big.
Yeah. We love you, Dimitri. Thanks, man.
Battle of the Bands is on. Go to the website, sign up now. If you want fame, fabulous prizes, and the chance to win $1,000 at the end of it all, you are an aspiring yet unpublished author.
Ah, yes.
You get to come in and pitch your book to us, and we get to play Simon Cowell and Kelly Clarkson and Adam Levine and all those other great judges.
I'm not Paula.
And we...
do you want me to play Paula?
Yeah, you can play Paula.
I'm fine with that.
Everybody wants to be Simon Cowell. Everybody wants to be the mean guy.
Yes, but who among us here does a British accent professionally?
Do you think we could get Nigel as a guest judge? We could get Nigel as a guest judge.
See if I can get dispensation for that.
So sign up for that, or if you know aspiring authors. I was trading emails with Mark Schaefer today. Reverend Mark Schaefer from AU.
Love Mark.
He's got some people he's turning
great.
On to it.
There
so come
go.
Back for that.
Extremely well written and well read, Mark Schaefer.
Yes.
And lovely. I didn't understand a word he said when he was on our show.
But a lovely man.
Not a word. Yeah. And then we have in front of us from Calvert Woodley, CW, we have our wine and cheese of the evening. I was over at CW today. They had, with all the wind yesterday, they had a little outage. There was no cheese at La Cheeserie in the refrigerator.
Okay.
Right there.
Being responsible.
They had cheese in the backup emergency coolers, which is how we got ours. But Abraham was looking a little lonely, standing behind his refrigerated counter with nothing there.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
It was really interesting. Yeah. And people, customers were kind of aimlessly wandering past it, like, what's wrong with this picture? Mm-hmm. And then they would wander back. And then if they had the inside scoop, somebody would go to the back coolers and get it for them. But we have, and I'll let David and Jeannie critique this, we have a Dolcetto, which is an Italian wine. It's by a vineyard called Vira. And Stephen was telling me over there, was telling me it's medium body, mm-hmm. goes with lots of things.
So my
pasta would be very good. We aspire to be less than medium body.
Exactly.
Medium body. Stephen said it goes with lots of things, and if you put a little bit of a chill on it, you could even serve it with your white meats. I think it's lovely.
I do, too.
Really lovely.
My glass is empty. That tells
yeah,
you
mine
I
is
mean.
Empty. There you go.
I think there's a hole in the bottom of your glass.
Can we open the second bottle now?
Yeah, barkeep, if we can get another round of that up here, exactly. That would be fantastic.
So we can fix that. And then the cheese is called a Pirano. It's a Dutch cheese, but aspiring to the Italian essence, mm-hmm. as someone with a straight face told me at La Cheeserie. God bless them. Mm-hmm. But it's very good. A little nutty, a little salty.
Like the saltiness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's good. Really,
it's kind of like an aged Gouda. That's what it reminds me of. Yeah.
So go to CW at 4339 Connecticut Avenue. We love them as a sponsor. And if you say Chatter 5 at checkout, you get $5 off.
Exactly.
That's a great deal.
Yeah.
It's a great place.
And you're going to want to go there anyways because it's just the place to go.
It's a scene.
Yes.
I've heard that when Jingle Fest comes to town, there is a pilgrimage that's
planned. Every year.
To go
year.
From here to CW.
Yeah. It's one of the landmarks.
We'll have to expand the Chatter 5 promotion.
The Social Safeway, right? They go there
Social
too.
Safeway. Yeah. I think maybe the BP.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's on the list. Bagel City.
They pay homage to the old dry cleaners.
Yes, the old where the old dry cleaner used to be, yes.
So they bring dry cleaning with them.
The offices at Politics and Prose.
Yeah, it's a whole deal. And by the way, in a ham-handed way, speaking of landmarks, as we are taping this.
No, it's not ham-handed at all.
This one, just a tragedy. There's no other way to put it. The fire at Notre Dame in Paris has been going on all day. We don't know what caused it at this point. We don't know the extent of the damage.
We hope no one's been hurt.
We hope that nobody's been hurt. We don't know what has been saved and what has been lost. We know that the spire has come down. It's just, you can't turn away from the coverage. I mean, it's just mind-blowing. And I think, Michael, you've been.
I have.
Jeannie, you've been.
Yes.
And Tori, you've been. So, David, you and I are the only
We're the only Luddites. That's correct.
We are. But it was always something that was sort of like on my list. Just I was like, I'll get to that at some point. And it's heartrending.
It should be on everybody's bucket list. It exceeds expectations. The history of the place, I'm going to miss everything. But Henry VI had his coronation there. Napoleon had his coronation there.
By the way, self-coronation with Napoleon, wasn't it?
Well,
I think he put the crown on and said, I am the king.
That's a short man thing.
I'm the captain now.
I think that was the French translation. Je suis le capitaine.
But think of it survived the French Revolution. It survives World War I. It survives World War II.
Yes.
Just phenomenal. I wish I could take credit for this, but I can't. I think it was Rich Lowry I saw first tweet this out at some point this afternoon. Victor Hugo on Notre Dame. Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Right.
Walk this way. No, walk this way. And he said, among other things about Notre Dame, and this was Victor Hugo, every surface, every stone of this venerable pile is a page of the history, not only of the country, but of science and of art.
Yeah.
Jeannie, you were saying just the flying buttresses alone.
If you study architecture at all, so much happened with the cathedral at Notre Dame that was just groundbreaking. And the flying buttresses, most notably, the light, the stained glass, it's breathtaking. I agree that when the first time you see it, you think, oh my gosh, this really exists.
Yes.
I felt that way, oddly enough, about the Tower of London, the first time I saw the Tower of London, just because of that history there.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, the princes, they were, held captive here. But it is tragedy that it's
okay.
Burning.
It is. It's nervousness, but I'll say it anyhow. P.F. Commenter, you know him?
No.
Yes.
P.F. Commenter, he, social media rock star.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Michael, you know him.
Yes, from Barstool?
Yeah, from Barstool.
Yeah, big Caps fan.
Big Caps fan. He tweets out not minutes after this all started this afternoon, this tragic fire of this incredible Landmark. Mm-hmm. He tweets out, "Wow, I thought Notre Dame didn't collapse till November."
Oh, see now,
that's too soon. Too soon.
Too soon. Too soon. So should we shouldn't do those Titanic jokes?
No.
Bummer. It is the anniversary of the Titanic.
It is.
That is true.
And there is a, I will recommend a wonderful story in the Washington Post about the monument to the men who allowed the women and children to go first. Mm-hmm. On the Titanic, and it's this wonderful monument, and I've seen it, which has been moved around. It used to be where the Watergate is now located. Boy, this is a local show, as Tony would say. It used to be where the Watergate is now. No, is it the Watergate? No, where the Kennedy Center is now located, and they've moved it, I think, a couple of times. But there's this really interesting collection of
people like to see that.
Who get together at 2 in the morning or whatever the correct time would be, and they have a little ceremony honoring the men who gave their lives so the women and children could survive. Wow. Yeah, it's lovely. On that happy note.
Except for, I can't remember the guy's name.
Ismay.
Bruce Ismay. Yeah. Bruce Ismay. Is that seat taken?
Yeah.
I'm just going to sit right
jump
there.
Right here.
Yeah. And the guy in the Titanic, I have a child! I have a child with me!
What's my favorite story from the Titanic and the White Star Line?
I don't know
this.
Oh,
that, yes. The infamous this band is, that played
100%
on. 100%
true. Yes.
The band that played
yes.
on.
Yes.
Not more than a few weeks after the Titanic sunk, the families of the band members got bills from the White Star Line charging them for mm-hmm. their uniforms.
Yes. Yep.
Yes.
Yes. There you go.
And apparently the designer, Andrews, really was a good person, a good human being, who went down with the ship and was, by all accounts, a gentleman until the very end.
Yes.
Yes. So yeah. Mr. Andrews, as played in the movie, great actor, can't remember.
I can't remember, right. but he is a great character
yes.
actor.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he was apparently that... That was legit. That was
Did
real.
Did his great guyness make up for being a lousy engineer?
No, it was not his call.
It
that
was
is
the
point. It was not his call not to put enough lifeboats on. Okay. He wanted more lifeboats on the ship.
Yeah.
And was overruled.
And probably wasn't a big fan of let's go as fast as we can in the middle of the night
exactly.
so we can break the record. And by the way, I would point out to everybody, keep your eyes peeled. Late this fall, early winter, we will be seeing the book about Rigel, the hero dog of the Titanic,
which was
written by yours truly.
You're there setting you expectations for us again about timing, but go ahead.
Well, speaking of timing.
Okay.
Well, my deadline's timing. October, so I'm hopefully be out by Christmas.
2023?
No.
Of timing, how
yes.
is that,
yeah.
book?
How's that book
report
going?
Is that going to be out by October?
Again, you didn't specify a year. So, alert listeners will know that a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. David gave me the choice, for my book report, he gave me the choice of Boys on the Bus, Fabulous, Invisible mm-hmm. Man, mm-hmm. Fabulous, mm-hmm. and Unbroken. All fabulous. Mm-hmm. Fabulous choices. I've read them all. I actually look forward to rereading one of them.
Have you decided which one?
I haven't. And I have lived and worked in Washington, D.C. long enough to know people in Washington don't do anything. We outsource. Correct? So I have outsourced the decision, and with the able help of the Phantom Daughter, mm-hmm. put a survey up on Twitter today asking our Twitter followers to choose which one.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
And then you're going to have a subcommittee hearing on that?
There's going to be an investigation.
There's going to be an investigation.
Definitely question the results of the survey. David doesn't get to vote. Yeah, Invisible Man was winning.
I don't want to vote.
Invisible Man was winning big time. Right, so, come back to this space next week.
So hopefully next week we'll have a choice for you.
50 votes.
Maybe.
So far.
Well, you are playing.
Maybe.
You are playing.
Bob Mueller has a lot of free time on his hands now, so I think he could come in and help me drag this out.
Do you have to vote to get to see what the vote total is?
Yes.
Ha.
Yeah. Trust me, Invisible Man is winning
you have
by leaps and bounds
on so far. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
But they're all really terrific books.
Well, you could read all three.
I have.
For extra credit.
Okay. Right. And if you don't have time to read books, you can wear them. Jeannie, you want to help with this segment?
Yeah. So this is based on a story in the Washington Post about a story that had been in the New York Post. Two very trendy young women, the Hadid sisters, were at the...
I love their carpets.
...Fashion Week in Paris.
That's what I thought.
Paris. And
I'm Joe Hadid. Sorry.
Perfectly.
But we'll take them as a sponsor.
Perfectly yes. dressed. And each carrying a book. Mm-hmm. One was carrying Stephen King's latest,
The Outsider?
The Outsider. Okay. Another was carrying The Stranger by Camus.
Ooh.
It did seem like a reach that perhaps this young woman was not a Camus fan, but I could be just being cynical here. But it provoked an interesting discussion about Were these two young women just using books as fashion trends, just sort of accessorizing them?
Yeah.
Or was this something that was good for literature, to have books out there, being seen, and perhaps might interest someone in Camus, for example?
Right.
So Tori and I thought it would be fun for each of us to choose a book that would, if you're cynical, be our fashion accessory. And if you're serious, would be a reflection of who you are and spur other people to read the book that you happen to be carrying.
It's interesting.
So,
or carry something that like the Camus book, like people will think more highly of me if they see me carrying
this. That too. Okay. That too.
So, and we're desperate for positive affirmation.
All the time. Raison d'etre.
So from a fashion point of view, as you know, it's been observed that I wear a lot of black.
Yes.
So
can't go wrong.
I thought I needed a book that had a lot of black. And sometimes I wear gray on the cover.
Jazz it up a little bit?
Yeah. It's a pastel for me.
Just break it out, people.
So at the same time, last week when we were discussing poetry, I thought of a poet that I hadn't thought of in a long time, and that is Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who just turned 100 years old. And his classic collection of poems is called A Coney Island of the Mind. And lo and behold, it has a black and gray cover.
Of course it does.
But I thought, too, I mean, Ferlinghetti is a very interesting guy. He was a poet. He was an artist. He's a social activist. He started City Light Bookstore in San Francisco, which is just a hub for interesting literature.
Cool. Yeah, it's a very cool place.
And so I thought, well, on the cynical side, here's my fashion statement, black and gray.
Nice.
But on the serious side, I'd love for especially young people who don't know about Lawrence Ferlinghetti to read Lawrence Ferlinghetti. So
I think Lawrence needs to work on his graphics. Because I'm looking at this from afar going, okay, it's a little hard to see.
Okay,
it's
well, it was published in 1958.
Okay,
so well,
not a lot of Photoshop.
Grandchildren probably can help him with that.
Yes.
Yeah. That is very cool. I like that as a fashion. And
don't you think it's me?
Oh, it absolutely is. No, and it's a great thing. People would be like, who is Lawrence Ferlinghetti? You'd be like, you should read him.
Exactly. It's funny you should ask.
And the woman who's carrying it is an aging hipster, clearly. So, it says a lot about me.
Poets. That's very cool.
Hip hipster.
I like that.
Okay.
I like that.
David, would you like to go next?
Is it my turn? Okay, so I had questions about this. Now, when you say you're carrying it, men don't have things to put things in when they're walking around.
That's why we're getting you a man bag.
Well, you see, here's the thing. I had one of those. I did have one of those back in the 90s. It was a clutch, it was called. And lots of people had them. And it was ridiculous. And I had it. And I thought, this doesn't work. You know, I tried it. Didn't work for me. So without anything to put the book in, see, I'm thinking of myself in a suit, carrying something.
Just carrying a book.
Well, that's what the Hadid sisters did.
They didn't have
a pocketbook.
It's out in the public, so you can see what it is. Because you can't get credit for it.
Yeah, you just
carry it around. Yeah, just carrying it around.
Okay, well, I have the book. I was just trying to figure out, is there a... Do I have a shoulder bag?
No. You're just carrying.
And here's Gigi trying to avoid the paparazzi holding her.
Oh, please don't talk to me. Yeah. Please.
I'm reading Stephen King.
I called all of you to be here. Yeah.
Here's the other one.
Oh, yeah.
It's Bella.
All right. So what I would have, I a charcoal pinstripe suit on, I would have with me a copy of The Elements of Style by Strunk and White.
Yes.
Ooh, that's good. That's
which is kind of ochre and blue. Yeah. It's covered.
I would have.
Perfect choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because I really like that book. And it's
sort of a double meaning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It speaks to the sense of who I am, which is a writer. That's what I always always have thought of for myself, even though the TV thing. But I always had this... I'm always a writer who's on television. That's what I always thought of myself. And so you have that, and then you also have the kind of sartorial angle as well. But I just love words, and that's a great book about words.
Perfect.
I'm horrified that this is the 21st episode of the show, and that book has never come up.
Yeah.
Of all the places I've worked and all the people I've had working for me, every single place I've ever worked, including Germany, and it didn't go over so well there, I would buy the people who work for me copies of that book.
Is that right?
Go, don't come back to see me. Do not come into my office. Do not darken my doorway until you have read this. It's phenomenal. It's still phenomenal.
It holds up. It's amazing how it's held up.
It's great. Mm-hmm. Okay, Michael?
So I had actually had a similar question as to David's as to how would I carry
I'm
this.
I'm always
I
available
think,
for follow-up questions. When so I send out the rundown,
from
I'm
my
available.
Teaching days, I carry a cross between a messenger bag, a satchel, mm-hmm. just a journal bag,
right.
deep brown leather,
yeah.
But it's a little unstructured. I would go one step in this question and say, what's the most pretentious bag that I can use to my own advantage
oh, nice.
Here? Which okay. would be a tote bag from the Daunt Bookshop just outside of London. If you don't know, if you don't
nice.
Know this bookshop, you, as the post would say, if you don't get it, you don't get it. Followed closely by the New Yorker subscription tote bag that you would carry with you on the bus, because nothing says pretense like a folded up copy of the New Yorker from 3 weeks ago. Can't be this week's because you don't have time to read it on a weekly schedule.
Right, you have to be 2 weeks right. behind. At least.
I'm very into.
Okay, wait a minute. The tote that is spectacular.
It
really,
it,
yeah. the pretension of those tote bags.
Because so yes. as we come back to what's happening over in Paris, I love when you visit new cities to find a secondhand shop. Bookshop and make sure you make a small purchase. It could be
yes.
another copy of your favorite paperback, but building your library with those classics are what builds stories that you can pass down.
Right.
I'm all about the texture of paperbacks. So I do not want to carry with me the latest hardcover because I just like for my book to be a statement about where I've been, and if I want it to be, I want it to close doors. So don't ask me any questions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can go wrong with any copy of an Evelyn Waugh book in paperback. Some of the most recent ones have these beautiful, I'll hold it up for News Channel 8, but it's a beautiful textured cover.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
That is
yeah, nice.
A throwback
yeah.
to this early, mid-20th century world in which he covers.
Look
yes.
to it, yeah.
So you're seeing the old suit cover, but Decline and Fall, for me, captures everything about my early years of teaching, and I always come back to this one quote. So if you were to stop me and you recognize the cover and you wanted to get in a conversation, I would come back to this quote. I've been in the scholastic profession long enough to know that nobody enters it unless he has some very good reason which he is anxious to conceal. It's a great social commentary. It's a great look at sort of the ups and downs of your first job. If you have spent any time in an independent private school world, their description of sports day, which is essentially the family day, donor day, how are we going to put on our best selves to have steak that one day?
Mm.
No, it's a fantastic book. And again, it can be used to say exactly what you want to say.
Nice.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
This is good.
I'm going to get rid of 15 tote bags when I go home tonight. Marie Kondo, here we come.
I'll take them.
Who's next?
Oh, is it to me? Well, I have no sense of style. I'm wearing a baseball hat and cowboy
boots.
Honey,
take us down because I'm going to go below you.
No, but, and I think those of you that have worked with me on the show for any length of time know that I have some anger issues, particularly when there's problems with the equipment.
No.
No, really?
So, yeah.
Only Monday through Friday.
Yeah, just those days. So I like to project, and I'm also a little guy, so I like to project sort of like a don't mess with me. So, and I have done this in the past, and I do like to carry a copy of The Art of War around with me. It's always
nice.
A slick-looking cover, and it's also like, yeah, I'm
friends
planning
close,
something.
Enemies close.
Don't
yeah.
mess with me.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
You could take that a lot of deep places.
Yeah.
Like
troubling but generally,
places.
Generally, if somebody's sitting
Al-Qaeda
next to me.
Al-Qaeda 101.
Well, if somebody's sitting next to me, like, at an airport, and I'm reading that,
mm-hmm.
it just, they'll maybe move a little, like one seat. Away from
yeah.
me, which I like.
TSA
I like.
Might.
I'm not getting
perk
on that plane
as
no.
well. Yeah,
I'm making a call.
Yeah, it's not the art of bringing a plane down.
I'm locking eyes with someone across the aisle.
You know what we have to do?
Let's go. Let's roll.
Let's roll.
Okay, as ever, I just think of these things so simply, and I thought when I was looking at the stories about these two models, and I'm going to try to be kind, but I think it was the one reading the Stephen King novel. Was that Bella or Gigi, Jeannie?
It's one of the Hadids.
Let me see.
Miss
Bella,
Hadid, I believe.
Bella was reading.
And if you've read a lot of the stories about them carrying these books, she's been reading it for 6 or 7 months.
Sure.
I just
want to
point
it's
out.
It's a big book.
It's a big book. But
she's
okay.
got a business
and
schedule.
You know, Stephen King is so slow.
Exactly. You really got to take your time.
It's not like she has a book report coming up.
Right. Anyways, I just thought this is pretension to the nth degree, so why not embrace pretension? And so if I were going to carry a book around and would want to be pretentious, for me, of course, it would be a book of poetry.
Oh, sure.
So it would be Sylvia Plath, Collected Poems.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
And it does have some wonderful stuff in it. It also has some dreadful stuff in it,
right.
as I learned researching this. But I, of course, would carry around a book of poetry and wear a beret.
But it has to be an old, yellowed paperback.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the penguin glasses.
Missing the front cover.
And you'd have to have an accent over the E in your name.
You would work it over and rub it in the dirt to make it look like you had actually ever broken the spine. Okay.
Hold it over a candle. Yeah.
To age it a little.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, correct, Mark?
That is right.
Will come back with Julie Langsdorf, who has written an amazing book about everybody we know in our neighborhoods in Washington, D.C. Stay with us. We are back. We're back to Chatter on Books. Did we say we were at the corner of Wisconsin and Jennifer Street?
We did not.
Yeah, we're at the corner of Jennifer Street and Wisconsin Avenue. We will be finishing this taping in exactly 29 minutes because the puck drops on game 3 of the Caps.
Exciting.
Just come to Chatter now if you can hear
come
the
to Chatter now. Come to Chatter Thursday.
Come to Chatter Thursday when, David, you will be here with whom?
I will be here with Tarek El-Bashir, who covered the Caps.
Oh, I love Tarek.
Who covered the Caps forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
Will be with us. He's with The Athletic now. So The Athletic DC Caps Watch Party starts about 6:30, half hour before puckage. So come here. We'll have food. We'll have some drinks, some of which you'll pay for, but most of which you won't. And come talk hockey or whatever. That's what we're
Excellent.
Here for.
Great. But right now we are here with Julie Langsdorf, hometown heroine, as far as I'm concerned. So Julie, the other day, welcome. I was at Reagan National Airport at about 6:30 in the morning, waiting for my flight to somewhere or other. And I go into Hudson News, and there's your book on the shelf. And there were three or four, and it was in the rising star section of the bookshelves. I thought, this is great. And I'm texting my daughter, a.k.a. the Phantom Daughter. And I said, oh, my gosh, I should take a picture of this and tweet it out. And she goes, yeah. And then there was kind of a stand in the way. So I didn't do it. And I thought, on my way back this afternoon, there were four or five copies on the shelf. Mm-hmm. On my way back this afternoon, I'll take a better picture, and then I'll do that. And I came back that afternoon, and they were all sold.
That's
so it's flying off the shelf. So your book, White Elephant, and we like your book, so we'll mention it a lot. White Elephant.
You do.
Some people call it a suburban comedy. There are different names for it. But there is gossip and envy and lust and revenge. And I'm thinking as I'm reading the book, and I listen to it as well, we are halfway through the Ten Commandments, and I'm only in chapter 3. So how many people, you're from around here, Washington, D.C., how many of your friends or relatives recognize themselves, their stories, their neighborhoods, and say, we're going to kill her? Have you lost friends writing this wonderful book?
I have friends who are wary now, who are pretty sure they're going to end up in my next book. But the only person who is really based on anyone is the character of Terrence, who's based on my brother.
Who was the one everybody could love.
So likable.
Right.
Yes.
Right. He's the one who actually can see things clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So how ostensibly the White Elephant is the McMansion that's being built in the middle of an older, more traditional neighborhood, and people are upset about the McMansion. People are upset about trees being cut down. For me, it was a lot about expectations. Expectations about yourself, your children, your marriage, your neighborhood. But how did you come up with all these stories?
The idea for the story arose from a series of articles in The Post and a few other papers around here years ago. I wrote it between 2005 and 2008. So there was a neighborhood, several neighborhoods, that were really basically dealing with this, and people were...
I think if we get her another glass of wine, she's going to slip up.
I might. Be really careful.
I live in one of those neighborhoods.
We all do. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. People were egging each other and yelling at each other in the street, and it was just such juicy material. And when you think about when people move into a neighborhood, how you greet each other with fudge and cookies, and everybody wants something when they move to a neighborhood, and really a spirit of camaraderie. So what had happened to these people that they were ready to kill each other? It's a long way from here to there. And it happens quite a lot. It's still happening.
It's still happening. I live right up the street in Somerset. These things happen all the time.
Yes.
All the time.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit in your backstory. You wrote as a child. You wrote about a beagle. Pirate tale. I love to ask on this show, what did you want to be when you were five? When you were five, did you want to be a writer?
I think I always wanted to be a writer.
Wow, that's a first. Yeah. Usually they wanted to play shortstop for the Yankees.
Well, I wanted to be an actress for a while, too. But then, writing is the thing that's really been there all along.
And tell us about the beagle story. because we have a dog author in the room.
I wrote a novel, and it was a beagle named Benjamin Banneker, and I do not know if I knew about the historical figure, but I know it was a chapter book.
Wild coincidence.
Did you go to libraries a lot?
I did.
Where did you go?
I grew up in Kensington. And Noyes Library, the children's library, is a favorite. That's just such a special place. And Kensington Park Library was the adult library that was not very far away. So those were my haunts.
And what were your favorite
kid.
Things to read?
I loved Harriet the Spy, from the mixed-up files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler, and Little Women, and all of the books that were about girls wanting to be writers. I related to them all.
Really? I think she's our first author who truly wanted to be
a writer, right?
That's great. So I read in an interview with you that your mother was a child survivor of the Holocaust.
Yes.
I don't want to put words in your mouth. You explain her story and why. When will you come back so we can talk about that book?
That is a book I've tried to write for many years, and I really do want to go back to it. My mother was, she left Germany as a 2-year-old. Her mother gave her up for adoption, and she was on a ship that was, that hit a mine in the English Channel. And so she was sent from Germany to England, then back to Holland, where she escaped hours before the Germans invaded.
Wow.
And she ended up in the Dutch West Indies as a child and then grew up in Venezuela.
She lives
in Kensington.
Just remarkable.
Yes.
Absolutely remarkable. I'm sure it would be tough to write, but that's something. It's on your list, right?
It is. It's such a story.
Oh, okay. All right, so what was the process writing this great book? Again, people, it's got this wonderfully lovely kind of safe cover to it, White Elephant.
Sounds innocuous, right?
It's nice, nice little houses.
Lust, envy, revenge, adultery, drugs, everything in there, is it? And I think anybody who reads this book could find somebody to whom they related. I related to Jillian, the young girl, who wanted to be with the cool kids, but the cool kids were bad and these kinds of things. What was the process of writing this book? Did you have the end in mind when you wrote this?
I did not. I knew it was going to be from multiple perspectives because, in a way, the neighborhood itself is the main character.
Yeah.
And I really hoped that readers would perhaps come to the book thinking, okay, this is a good person, this is a bad person, but by the end of the book would think, oh, that good person, well, she's kind of bad, and that bad person, well, she's kind of good. Mm-hmm. Just, I really tried to make them very human.
Yeah.
And
how did
really
you keep track of all of them? Carol Kornheiser is here, our guardian angel, and we were talking before the show. There were so many characters, and what they were doing and how they were behaving was unfolding as the book went on. Mm-hmm. How did you keep track of what was happening and how they were interacting? I envision a giant whiteboard in your house.
I don't have that, but I definitely, toward the end of the process, I definitely would go through each character's story to make sure that they worked with all of the other characters, that there was follow-through in every aspect. Because after a while, everyone's arc has to make sense. They all kind of get to a certain place.
Right.
So a lot of it was craziness in the brain, but then in the end, you really have to sit down and make sure it all works.
Yeah. Is there a sequel?
No, not at this point.
I found myself, I might have said this to Jeannie already, but I read the book, and then when I have time, I like to listen to them as well. And I apologize, I don't know who read the book, but it was really, really well done. And I'm driving along somewhere, and it's coming to the end. I went, no, I don't want this to end. And I find myself slowing down, literally slowing down the car, somehow thinking, that'll make it last longer. It's really dumb. But I felt, because they are, like I guess like people, they're unfinished characters. And I thought, I want to know more how their lives turn out.
Definitely their stories, you don't know quite what happens. You know where they're headed, possibly, but I hope that it's open to interpretation.
Is there a movie in the future of White Elephant?
Not yet, but I would be open to it.
Seems unnatural. I could start casting it right here
or
and now.
Or a limited TV series. I'm open to a lot.
Yeah, you're okay with that. Netflix, too. I was watching the next season of, or reading about the next season of Big Little Lies. And I was thinking, this is that genre, but it's better because it's more complex and it's more realistic, I guess. Right? But you can see all those people.
What was interesting to me was the way I came to it was there was this perfect neighborhood, Sears bungalow houses. Mm-hmm. Who would want to change that? And then you begin to subtly mention the flaws in these perfect
Sears bungalow houses. I am someone who grew up, two parents, four kids, in a three-bedroom, one-bath house. And so all of a sudden, that sort of wonderful, happy aura of a small little bungalow house does begin to wear a little thin. And so when the white elephant arrives with its media room and its bathrooms aplenty at all, I mean, you see the seduction of architecture, of how somebody who was committed to this charming little bungalow could easily want to start tearing things down and building things up. And I felt my own transformation along with some of the characters.
They're different visions of the American dream in a way. And a lot of the bungalows, they're lovely, but they're romanticized.
Mm-hmm.
They're a lot of work. And again, as you mentioned, not necessarily as comfortable as these larger houses that some people might feel aren't as beautiful as the house that they want to live in. But then I tried to show that from the builder, from Nick Cox's point of view and his family, mm-hmm. they can't imagine why anyone would want something else if they could have it.
That's right.
When he moves in, he thinks, if you could have a house like this, why wouldn't you? Why would you want to live in a little shack with room units, air conditioning room units? He doesn't understand it.
Right.
So I hope that even if a reader doesn't necessarily agree with the characters, that they can begin to see the other side of it.
That definitely happened.
And this
that
is why
definitely happened with me and Nick. I'm
and this
sorry,
is why it's so important for this to be a D.C. suburban neighborhood, because we're looking at this so often around here, you're buying into a zip code and you're not buying into a community and sort of the tradition and the habits that have made that community or that zip code so worthwhile. So you have, from the Cox's point of view, you have someone who's sitting on something that is a high net value, but they're seeing value in a completely different way. So from a DC insider, it was really, I love seeing the town itself, to see the houses, to see the trees as these vestiges of the community and the norms. And then you're coming back to, with that romantic ideal, are we actually living up to what it was, say, 20 years ago, or to what my parents had when they lived here? And you see, that's one reason why Ted might be stuck in this midlife crisis, and why there is this crippling distance between the families. You're trying to say, well, who exactly are we? And then even if you're looking at this from somebody from the outside, you're trying to question, well, where are we from our public or our private selves as we're taking this trip down those city center streets?
I think that what we each see something different in each neighborhood. We do come at it from different ideas of what the ideal neighborhood is. So for some people, the smaller houses, the sidewalks, that is the dream. And it is a dream, perhaps it is a dream from a while back, but it feels like what a lot of people want America to feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that from Nick's perspective, that dream is no longer the dream.
I loved reading about Nick, and because I'm when I first saw him,
Nick
and I'm
is
one of those people.
The developer
yeah. builds the big houses, and when I just tend to race through things and make instant snap judgments, and then the way you had his character unfold, I go, okay, I don't agree with him, but I understand it, and I love that. And I swear to God, I'm sure everybody who reads this book goes, oh no, she was in my neighborhood. I didn't see her, but she was in my neighborhood. We had a developer in our neighborhood. It's Somerset, right up the street. And Somerset, about 50%, Michael would know, about 50% of the homes were built in the 40s, 50s, 60s, a lot of Ramblers. And over mm-hmm. time, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's on a nice-sized lot. Let's tear down the Rambler
right.
and put up a bigger house. And some of them are nice and some of them are less nice. This particular builder put up really, really nice houses, and he got a lot of flack from a lot of people. Drummond actually gave him more flack than my neighborhood, if truth be told. They gave him a lot of flack, and I saw a lot of him in Nick and his life. And he'd just say, your dream, your aspirations for this neighborhood are different than other people, and that should be okay. I just think it's remarkable. I really do. I think it's remarkable that you took something that sounds so simple. Oh, McMansion, mm-hmm. trees being chopped down, and it becomes really about what people are aspiring to, what they're hoping for in their lives.
And how we are all really very similar. We tend to think that somebody with a different point of view is really dissimilar from us, but I really try to show that in the book, that the way they each feel inside is the same. Everyone wants to be seen. Everyone wants to be loved. Everybody wants good things for their families. And I think especially now, everything is so stratified. And in this neighborhood, I think it's pretty similar to the rest of the country. Yeah. And we're tending to vilify the other.
One thing that was not in your book, I'm really curious about. So Lucy is sort of the, I don't want to give too much away. Everyone should read White Elephant by Julie Langsdorff. Lucy has the, she's kind of crunchy. She's kind of the crunchy granola head in town. And she's got the cute little coffee place that we think is down on the corner of Sangamore, right? Isn't it down there in Sangamore?
No, no, that's the White Elephant. Yeah. It's down on Sangamore.
Carries a copy of Lawrence Ferlinghetti around with her.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes,
there we go.
Exactly. We all know the place. She has a bulletin board on which people start to write things, and at first it's mean things, and then it turns into, at the end, it's about nice things. But every neighborhood I know now has a listserv. And my husband, very smartly, has said, you are not allowed to be on the Somerset listserv.
I love correct. The listserv.
Correct. Right?
Yes.
And the things people say, and the things people do on the listserv, and the people who hit reply all and go, oh my God, I didn't know I hit reply all, when they're slamming Mark down the street. They know. You did not have a listserv in your book. Why?
In the book, I like the idea of the bulletin board as the physical manifestation of all of that, mm-hmm. everything that's going on mm-hmm. on the internet that is anonymous. Mm-hmm. And in the community, the bulletin board is originally, she puts it up because she wants residents to put a blue tack if they're for the community having a moratorium to discuss the size of the houses, and a red thumbtack if they don't want to do that. So the idea
is Somerset
is
embracing this, by the way.
So immediately, of course, people put up notes under those thumbtacks and everything goes haywire. But I like, there's a lot of sneaking around in this town after dark, and I like them physically doing that, going to put things up, sneaking into the woods, sneaking to each other's houses. I liked it more than it just being on the internet. There's a little bit of internet stuff where somebody is sending around tree poems. Yeah. That's really the only way.
Right. Yeah. Well, also, you mentioned that you wrote this between 2005 and 2008 when listservs were not as prevalent as they are now. So what took so long? Just the publishing process and agents and editors and all that stuff?
When I wrote it, it was at a time when people were building houses like this, and then the bottom fell
right.
out of the market.
Right, right. 2008.
Exactly. So I had an agent who could not sell it at the time, and then I put it aside for years, and then in recent years, I realized everything had come back.
They're
tenfold.
Back.
Yes. 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 Serendipity.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Terrence is your favorite character. I think Terrence was everybody's
yes,
favorite
sure.
character in the story, for mm-hmm. sure. He was the one you just kept coming back to. I'd start to get worried, and I'd start to get upset reading or listening. Oh, Terrence is there, thank God. Who was your least favorite?
There
come
again,
on.
So some of the characters, Nick and his daughter, are both characters that if I knew them in real life, I might have issues with them. Mm-hmm. But I love them as my characters. And I love that they say all of the things that people can't really say in real life. And they do the things that people can't really do in real life. So I loved writing characters that were very different from someone I aspire to be.
And even Nick's daughter at the end. You think, okay, there's hope.
There is hope.
There's hope.
Even
yeah.
when she makes a certain false accusation, which troubled yeah. me very, very, very much.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I hope that she has learned something from it, and I hope that her path will be better from here out.
Okay.
So how do you handle bad reviews? I always wonder how writers handle bad reviews.
I've been very fortunate so far. one of the places that you can get all kinds of reviews mm-hmm. is on Goodreads and Amazon. Mm-hmm. And so I stay away from Goodreads as an author.
Good
because
moves,
it
yeah.
doesn't help.
No.
There are all kinds of people out there. You don't necessarily know what their motivation is. Mm-hmm. And as an author, I think you can get really, if you really pay attention to the bad reviews, you might not want to write again.
No, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly.
No.
But do you ever feel like, well, maybe they have a point there, and that will help me the next time?
In certain cases, yes. But I think that you open yourself up to too much that's damaging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did your editor help you?
Both my agent and my editor were really brilliant and really helped add to the book to make it shine. They both pushed me to put my characters in riskier situations. So some of the things that they say and do, I was more protective of them originally. Mm-hmm. They do some things that I thought, oh, but if they do that, no one will like them. So part of the challenge was, can people still relate to them, even if they don't love them, even if they're not the, quote, likable character, can people relate to them? Can I make them somebody that you would believe that would do this and that you still feel for them, even if they do something that you feel might be a little morally off?
Yeah.
So it was an interesting challenge.
So they were very, very helpful, which is
very helpful.
The case. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll let you out on this one. What's next?
I have another book that is I've recently finished, and it is now with my agent, and it's about another Maryland neighborhood, also multiple perspective, also a suburban comedy about a topical issue, but I can't say more about it.
Ooh.
But hopefully you'll know about it soon.
Great.
Come back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Come
we'll
back.
Be here.
Love to have you back. So everyone should write. You can't go to Reagan National Airport and buy this book now because it's all gone. But go find White Elephant. It's wonderful. And again, I feel a little bit about this book the way I felt about Jane Levy's book on Babe Ruth. Even if you didn't like baseball or mm-hmm. care about Babe Ruth, there was something in that for everybody. There was something for everybody in this book. And everyone will find someone to whom they relate. It's their next door neighbor. Maybe not me. But it's really wonderful. Julie Langsdorf, thank you for being with us. Stay with us. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with not deserted island recommendation, but archipelago recommendation.
Well done.
And then it's going to be a hockey puck drop.
Welcome back for what for you was just milliseconds, but exactly. for us was a fascinating discussion about what goes on in neighborhoods. I am not a homeowner, and I have a fairly tame neighborhood I live in. I just hate my neighbors.
Oh, we all hate our neighbors.
But, man, there is stuff that goes on that I have no idea about. That's why the White Elephant is so brilliant. Thank you, Julie, for sitting in with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are not done,
okay.
because now...
All right.
More.
Yeah. Have we got more wine for you?
Okay.
pass it on down. Here you go.
Absolutely. Here you go.
Your work yeah. is done.
Glass is empty.
All right.
There you go.
Because now, we just do Deserted Island. If you're stuck on a deserted island, you have one book. What would that book be? We've gone through that quite a bit, so now we are changing. Yeah, we're changing it up.
Someone
a little
ran
bit.
Out of books.
I did. I'm dumb. I told you how stupid I was compared to the rest of you.
You could have just
moron.
Gone. Sports Illustrated, August 1977, and the next 78.
I love that. DeFord wrote a great piece on Nancy Lopez.
So now we're going with the Archipelago. Okay. So a series of books.
Yeah.
Tori, this was your call. Do you want to lead off?
I would be happy to lead off, because let's lead off with the most superficial. So instead of one book, what's a series? And I always, when we do these things, I try to think, okay, what really impacted me?
Mm-hmm.
We all know I love horses. The Black Stallion series by Walter Farley. And again, I went to my little public library, go in the front door, take a left, hard left. There's the section on horses. Mm-hmm. And there was Walter Farley. And he wrote about 15 or 20 himself, born in Syracuse, New York, where we know it only snows. Lived in New York City, and his uncle raised different kinds of horses, and he learned a lot about them.
Wow.
So he starts writing about the Black Stallion, then it was the Black Stallion Returns, and then it was Son of the Black Stallion, and then it was Flame. And he's got a son who now carries on the tradition. But one of the most interesting things about it, and I think a kid growing up outside Pittsburgh, why I liked it, is because he traveled a lot. Really interesting guy. Published his first book as a freshman at Columbia University, by the way,
wow.
Black Stallion. But he traveled a lot. So you'd have the Middle East in his books. You had Cuba. He had a big horse race scheduled in Cuba. And I loved it when I was reading these stories about horses, which I love. But I thought, here are these wild, crazy places. And I swear to God, there was a librarian at the public library who saw me reading these books again and again and again. And she had a globe. And she would show me on the map where these places were. So those stayed with me. I loved them. They were fabulous. He had Farley had kids... reading clubs where he encouraged kids to read and had incentives for them to read. So that's
very
mine.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Mr.
Go?
Aldridge?
No, you go.
Oh, you want me to go?
Yes.
I've read series of the things I love the most. The
Is
first
history?
No, just every. I mean, the first series I wrote was read was the Chronicles of Narnia.
Mm.
You know,
Chronic
and,
what?
And the Chronic what of Narnia? Lazy Sunday afternoon cupcakes. For those who don't know that reference. Yeah, I love that. I love that to death. I read, you know, obviously the Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings. I've read so many series over the years. And some of them were military history. There's one called based on like a fictional British soldier called Sharp, which I really love writing. There's about There's about 20 books in that. But to me, the one that stands out, and I've read through it twice, which is a really tall order, is the Aubrey Maturin books by Patrick O'Brien. Yeah. I think there's like 20-something books in there. And if you love the, because there's on the surface like, oh, it's just about a British naval officer in the early 1800s. There is such a slice of life that goes on with this, and it's just a fascinating, comprehensive study of those times and the mindsets, and it's just, not to mention leadership
and strategies,
and all these great different things. It really, it's just brilliant. And like you were talking about, you wanted to slow your car down because you didn't want it in. As the series was coming to an end, you would just like put it away for a while because you didn't want it to. Yeah, you didn't want it to come to an end. So for me, that's the one.
I love that.
Excellent, Michael.
So not to go back into neighborhood politics, Mark likes to say he stays away above the fray.
Chatter on
just
neighborhood politics.
Well, we could have a whole show on that on Zone 3 parking alone for this guy who's worried about the one spot in front of his house. I have to break up this question about series into two time periods for myself. The first would be pre-12 years old and post-12. Pre-12 is a book series.
Not to interrupt, but to interrupt. I agree completely. When I was thinking about this, I was thinking, what do I read and reread now? But what really stayed with me, Black Stallion was definitely pre-12. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important.
So for these early readers, this is a series that my mom, who's here, would remember well, the Redwall series by Brian Jakes. And again, these were supposed to be accessible to a whole variety of readers. So it was very tactile. These were really kinesthetic experiences. And, you know, I'm looking at my son, who's going to be 2 this year, and we're faced with the question of how do we teach morality in today's world. And I look back at these books, and they really introduce these tough questions in age-appropriate, safe, realistic ways, even though it is fantasy and it deals with wildlife critters out in the forest. It is real to the kids, and that's an experience that taught me so much while also teaching me how to write, how to read, how to be creative. And I'm a straight-up millennial with this, but post-12 is all Harry Potter. I was very lucky that when the books first came out, they were really tracking me in real time. So when the books became more complicated, darker, that's where I was in my life. When they were finishing up in college, I was looking forward and thinking of those questions myself. So the books, not necessarily anything else, but for what it meant for me in that moment of my life, Harry Potter.
I was tempted to say Harry Potter because the impact on our family.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids, who are now early 20s, God, the day they reached the drinking age. But Harry Potter was a big part of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they would let us read it together. And we were on a boat once for 3 days with no nothing, and which was great. And we read Harry Potter. And I think almost any age you can get something from Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. That's what's remarkable.
And I remember being at summer camp where the books would be released because it would always be an early July release. Mm-hmm. And there would be one kid. And he'd be fighting over sharing that copy.
Yep.
And then he'd have the friends who would, no, I have to get the early release UK edition for the torch.
I love the pre and post-12, though. Jeannie?
Pre-12 would be Nancy Drew.
Yes.
Because I really,
big
really
anniversary recently.
Wanted to be,
yes.
You know, I still actually would like to be a private detective. I think I'd be an excellent private detective.
I think with
get the Harry
perspective
the spy
of age and time and knowing when Nancy Drew books were out, they were remarkable.
They were.
When you think about what she was doing.
The power that she had.
Mm-hmm.
But loser boyfriend.
Ned, was it Ned? And she drove a coupe.
I have never looked kindly on anybody named Ned.
No.
Ever since.
Ned Flanders.
Ned
Beatty, fine.
Post age 12 is the Elena Ferrante quartet. I mean, these four books about these two women who grow up in Naples. One of them was just made into an HBO series, My Brilliant Friend, which is which I want to watch again. It gets into so much. It gets into politics. It gets into family culture. It gets into rivalries and jealousies and rich and poor and class system.
Mm-hmm.
But at the heart of it is these two young girls who come of age and become friends and become very different from each other. And lots of mystery and...
Wonderful.
I love them.
Wonderful. David?
Good Lord. Again, I feel like a moron. Compared to everyone else here. There's a couple. that
I just use Google, honey.
No,
when I'm feeling dumb,
no.
I go right to
no,
Google.
No, no, it's not
how to sound smart
no,
talking about book
that.
Series.
It's
you
not,
can find
no,
it.
It's not even that. It's that the you mentioned it before. I always think about the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books by Jeff Kinney.
Sure.
Because that's how my kids learned how to read. They both loved that series of these books about these 12-year-old boys, essentially, and the trouble that they got into. And it was not that I enjoyed reading them. I enjoyed watching my children read them.
Right.
For me, I think I've mentioned this before, but I go back to the Robert Carroll trilogy on
LBJ.
LBJ, yes. Sorry, The Path to Power, especially being one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah.
But also, and I think I may have mentioned this before, Carl Hiaasen, the great columnist down at the Miami Herald, has written 15 books, 15 novels about crime in Miami.
Right.
Novels about these overwrought criminals, these oversized criminals who do these terrible things and all meet these awful, wonderful endings.
They are great audiobooks.
They get what they deserve. Yeah. And they're all thwarted by a character who is known as Skink, who is a former governor of Florida who went insane and ran into the Everglades where he lives now in the hull of a rusted out stock car.
This sounds great.
And it's just wonderful writing. And it's just this great morality play where bad people get what's coming to them. And it doesn't even matter how graphic or awful it is because they deserved it.
Yeah.
And they're great reads.
Agree completely. I love Carl Hiaasen. But Michael, we need to do something on audiobooks.
Ooh. Yeah,
which
yeah,
I
for
will
sure.
crush because all I do is live in my car and listen to books. But some books really lend themselves to being great on audio. Those are great. I like that, David. I like those a lot. Yeah. Julie, do you have a favorite series? I didn't tell you in advance. This
you didn't,
is a little unfair.
No, I was so many. But I was remembering when I was about 12 reading everything Agatha Christie.
Oh.
And,
yes.
Yeah. And then before that, the Encyclopedia Brown books. Sure. And there was a couple of the Harriet the Spy, the Little House books.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I really hadn't thought I'd read series recently, but when you mentioned Elena Ferrante, that probably is my most recent series favorite.
Whenever I hear Encyclopedia, I like to remind people my father, God bless him, 97, is rereading the Encyclopedia Britannica.
The series he's reading.
From the start.
What letter is he on now?
He's up to about R, I think.
Oh. R, okay.
And I'm a little worried. I think it's like The Leaves on the Tree. What was that movie? What was that dreadful movie when the last leaf fell off the tree, the little girl dies? I'm thinking, wow, he gets to Z. That's it. He's done. He's done. But yeah, he's working his way through. He's read, he must be in the tens of thousands of books now and has reread many books.
Well, then he'll start reading the French version. There you go.
German. Exactly. Mark, are we done?
We are done. But what do we have coming up next week?
Well, what we have coming up in just a few minutes is puck drop
Caps
of game three.
So
oh my
Tori
God.
Wants
it's
to
on.
Get out of here.
Gotta get out of here.
Tori
so
wants
get
to get
out of
here. Just tone in next week. You'll see whatever we got.
Right.
You'll
we're
like it.
Stuff.
Get out of here. Everyone should run out. Don't go to Reagan National, but run out and buy Julie's book, Julie Langsdorff, White Elephant. It's really something. Thank you very much for being with
really
us.
Thank you so much. This was such fun.
Next week, boy, from the sublime to the ridiculous, but he seems like a great guy. Chuck Culpepper from the Washington Post. Really, really wonderful guy. My favorite phrase about the Final Four. It's the rescue dog of Final Fours, which is spectacular. But he has a really wonderful book called Bloody Confused, A Clueless American Sports Writer Seeks Solace. And it's about soccer, but primarily about British soccer. But it's fabulous. He's a fascinating guy, a dear friend of Liz Clark, so we will love him. So come back next week. Thanks, everybody. Go Caps.
Okay.
Go Caps.
Go Caps.